shoot, they score!
Score!
We have put the clock in!
Hit the shot, he scores!
This week in the NHL.
I felt like I did all the right things to prepare for this game.
We got to be focused all 60 minutes.
This week in the NHL.
The most arrogant team he's ever played against.
Do you think that's more of a personnel issue or more of a
He's dominating like the Jets wanted him to do.
This is NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve. Now Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, and Richard Pollock on your home of the Winnipeg Jets and all things hockey. TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca.
Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this evening at TSN1290.ca, good evening, universe, and welcome to NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, alongside my colleagues, Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. 2 hours of hockey talk for you on this Wednesday evening. Joining us in about 30 minutes time, we're going to speak to the Washington Capitals play-by-play broadcaster on CSN Mid-Atlantic. His name is Joe Beninati. He's been a frequent guest on this program, and coming up at the top of the next hour, Carey Fraser from TSN.ca, the Come On Ref feature. We know that Winnipeg Jets fans have been saying Come On Ref, and oftentimes worse than that, throughout the course of this season as the Winnipeg Jets continue to take penalty after penalty. Ezzy, Richie, good afternoon, good evening, rather, to both of you gentlemen. How are you?
Doing good. Good evening to both of you guys. Yeah, it's a bit of a you know, difficult time for the Winnipeg Jets right now, even though they won a couple of home games and snapped out of that losing streak. But it was a tough loss last night, especially considering, Drew, that the Jets really badly outplayed the Colorado Avalanche, I thought, and I think Rich and yourself would agree, in the second period. So it's a situation right now, because they only won two of their three games at home, they're going to really have to go on this road trip and, again, prove that they can get back on a good streak here and in a good situation. So it's, again, I think there's a lot of concern with the Winnipeg Jets, especially with Andre Pavlik going down with injury. And the question right now is whether or not Michael Hutchinson, can keep this going. And I think that right now, based on the way they've played at home, I'm not as concerned as some others. And I think even though the schedule is going to be hard, I think that you have to keep in mind the Jets are only a couple points behind the Chicago Blackhawks, defending Stanley Cup champions, and the season is still young. Now, I know that the 6-game losing streak was difficult, but I think that we have to also keep in mind that the Jets have been playing well, and they did pick up those two wins. And last night was difficult, as you could tell. But it's only one game.
Richard, Jets take 2 out of 3 on this homestand that just concluded last night with a disappointing defeat to the Colorado Avalanche, of course. Successful homestand to your mind, or does last night's defeat to the Avs really sort of leave a sour taste as they head out onto the road for 3 more games?
Yeah, I don't know, Drew. I think that the 2-1 record isn't awful, obviously. I mean, it's a good record. You can go 2-1 the rest of the way,
which we talked about a couple of weeks
basically
ago.
Basically what you need to do.
Yeah.
The teams they played against, all teams, I think that they're better than, and all teams at the end of road trips. You know, that's mm-hmm. something that I think you need to take a better advantage of. But if I'm looking at the three games as a whole, I don't love the way the Jets are playing right now. I don't think the Jets are playing very good hockey. I think they played okay hockey against bad teams and got 4 to 6 points. I've seen them play a lot better. I think they're going to need to play a lot better starting tomorrow night against a very good Washington Capitals team. But I didn't see, I know Tyler Myers had comments, and people think that, the Jets really controlled the game last night. I think you're playing against one of the worst teams in the league.
Especially defensively.
Bad defensively. They don't have very much after the first line, Drew, especially when they load up like that with Duchesne and McKinnon on the same line. And you didn't take advantage of it. I don't think that you played a particularly good game. And, it's all fine to have the puck, but, do you get the puck in the right areas? Do you create a ton of chances? Do you get into the dirty areas? And there are a lot of guys who didn't yesterday. So I didn't particularly see it as a very good game. And, I mean, you lose 4-1 to Colorado, and I know it was 2-1 with less than 5 minutes. You still lost. You lost at home. And I think that's the game that you need to perform better. And I thought really, you know, they're better. They're certainly better than they played last night. And I thought the crowd spoke you know, said a lot. The crowd was not into it, and I don't think the Jets gave them a lot of reason to be into it.
You know, you talked about the, you know, the Jets controlled the play in the Colorado zone, and you know the shots on goal or, you know, weren't indicative of that, but you know the shots, the Jets attempted shots, whether they were blocked or missed them
out
entirely.
That's great, Drew, but I mean you need to get the puck in behind the goaltender, and I know it's only one game. Well, yeah, you know you're getting to points now where you gotta get wins.
Well, it's sitting there. That game is sitting there for the taking to make it to sweep the homestand. Yeah. Which we talked about, you know, last Tuesday when they started this homestand, we said, yuck, all three of these games are must wins, especially coming off of a 6-game losing streak.
I mean, say must win. I know, November, not, but it's very important to win. These are games that they ought to win.
Yeah, games they expect to win. And so, you know, I didn't think they were great against Vancouver, and I didn't think they were great against Arizona.
They're better against Vancouver, I thought, than they were against Arizona.
Fine,
in my opinion.
Yeah, I would agree with that. But like, those aren't great teams by any stretch of the imagination.
They didn't play poorly, I'd say. They just didn't play as well as I thought they could play.
You know, you get the early lead, relatively early lead. Yesterday, 1-0, and it seems like the first time they saw some adversity when the Avalanche tied it up. It seems like the Jets wilted at that point in time.
I don't know if I go that far, Drew. I just don't think they were executing on what they needed to. I mean, you allow the 1-1 goal, you play 1-1 for a while. I just think that Colorado. Patrick Waugh, I know we talked about Patrick Waugh. You look at the roster. I don't know, Drew, if you want to reconsider, but you look at the roster that he had yesterday. And you look at the way he structured that game plan. Well, the game plan was pretty simple. Aside from the first line and taking chances off offense, but you're going to back up. They were backing up in the neutral zone. They were clogging it. They were trying to take away the middle. Their defense is not very good, as you noted. And I thought they did a pretty good job, Ezzy, of keeping a lot of stuff to the outside. And maybe the Jets played into their plans a little bit, but I don't know if it was a matter of – I didn't think they didn't deal with the adversity as much as they just didn't bring enough emotion and didn't execute well enough. And that's going to leave you in a tough position.
The lack of emotion sort of speaking to why the crowd at MTS Center sort of not engaged.
And I was saying yesterday, it's a chicken or the egg, right? Like, is the crowd not engaged because the team's not playing – or the team not playing that well because the crowd's not engaged? Usually you put it up more on the team than on the crowd. But sometimes you do rely on your home crowd to get you going. And the Jets crowd, I felt like, was sitting there waiting – for the other shoe to drop yesterday.
Well, I think they're waiting for the team to give them something to cheer about. And, you know, carrying the puck in and skating it around the sides, you know, around the sideboards and then in back and then around to the sideboards and back to the point and not really generating scoring chances isn't going to make me jump out of my seat and cheer raucously.
And even though I'm not as concerned as some might be about the Jets' current situation right now, if you look at the Jets' schedule coming up, we know they have Washington tomorrow night. And they've got Minnesota and Colorado back-to-back Friday and Saturday. Yeah. You look at the schedule, and sure, Toronto next Wednesday isn't a difficult game, but you've got two road games against the Chicago Blackhawks coming up. Mm-hmm. You've got a couple of home games against the St. Louis Blues, and you've got a couple of games on the road that are easier later in the month against Edmonton and Calgary. You should throw in a game against the Rangers as well. But you're not going to have an easy schedule coming up, and no team really has an easy schedule in the NHL right now, but the Jets are going to have to make up points, and they're going to have to make up points
against good
teams.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's exactly
And they've already lost to the Minnesota Wild. They've already lost to the Colorado Avalanche. The Washington Capitals are the best team in the Eastern Conference right now. Sure, Montreal and Rangers have a good record too, but what I mean is they're the one of the best teams in the Eastern Conference right now. And as we mentioned, plus you got Washington coming up again at home next Saturday. You've got a lot of tough games coming up. If you want to break up the schedule into kind of 5-game chunks, I know Rick Ralph likes to do that on his show and on the pre- and post-game show. It's not easy, with the exception of Colorado and Toronto. And sure, you got Columbus. I should mention they got Columbus on December 10th, so I'm going to get to see Torts again at the MTS Center. The point being that the Jets are going to have to make up some points. And even though you look at the schedule and you say, okay, and I know Rich said that the Jets are going to essentially have to win 65% of their games here going forward. And that is true. If you're expecting to get to 99 points, or if you're expecting 99 points to be the requisite amount of points to get into the playoffs, that's what you're going to need. But the point is, the Jets have to beat the teams that are below them in the standings, because it's not going to get any easier. Washington's not going to be an easy win. And certainly the Minnesota Wild are not going to be an easy win. They're a really good team. So it's a difficult situation they're in right now. They've lost seven of their last. They've lost seven of their last 10, and it's a difficult trip coming up with the back to back. But you know, to Richie's point about the way they played, I mean, they utterly dominated the second period. And sure, you come out of the game with no points. And Tyler Myers saying that they deserve to win doesn't mean much. But I think if you're concerned about the way they're playing, I think it's more so about the way they're not finishing and they're not getting offense from certain players. We know Andrew Ladd's struggling a little bit, but Brian Little and Blake Wheeler have been there all year. We know Mark Scheifele is having a good year. He's on pace for 30 goals. Nikolai Ehlers, they're not getting offense from him right now. Adam Lowry, Alexander Burmistrov, go up and down the lineup. I mean, Chris Thorburn got a really nice goal on Saturday against Arizona, but you can't count on Thorbs to be your secondary offense. They need other guys to get going, and they don't have that right now. So that, to me, is more of a concern. The way they played, I mean, they had possession of the puck. Colorado couldn't get out of their own
zone.
Yeah,
but they had possession of the puck, and that was almost by design for Colorado in large parts of the game. We'll give them possession, but we're going to keep it to the outside. And the Jets didn't do anything. It was going to take effort for the Jets to get to the front of the net against Colorado last night based on Colorado's game plan, and the Jets didn't show that effort. They didn't, it's a want to go to the front of the net and get dirty goals. And what I'd be concerned about, is, from my perspective, is the Jets didn't have that want. They didn't recognize the need to go get dirty to score goals last night, and it ended up costing them a game.
Patrick Waugh's game plan was not to be hemmed in their own zone for an entire period, Drew. I agree with what you're saying. I think that the Winnipeg Jets were not going to the net enough and weren't maybe getting enough shots on net. They missed the net a lot last night, and they had, I think, the ratio was 2-1 as far as shot attempts go. They just weren't scoring, and that's why I was concerned watching that game, that they only had a one-goal lead, and they were completely controlling the zone. They were completely controlling the neutral zone. Colorado's defense looked like they were ready to throw in the towel. But you're right. I mean, at the end of the day, they didn't get any goals in that second period. They only had the one goal lead, and they let Colorado get back into it, right? That's all it takes is one lucky goal. That's what Colorado got on their power play goal. It was a fluky goal that went off a skate. It went off of Tyler Myers' skate. The second goal went off of Cody McLeod's skate.
Yeah, both were fluky.
So they weren't nice goals. Duchesne's goal was nice on the third goal. Yeah. But you're right. I mean, sometimes you got to be a little bit more greedy, Drew, right? And go to the net and force things, because when you have that amount of zone time and you don't get any goals, that's what happens. The other team can get back in the game.
You know, I agree with you. I don't always want to simplify things. You know, just state it. But I'll put it to you this way: Colorado's in the last game of a 7-game road trip. Mm-hmm. The Jets are at home for the end of a 3-game homestand. Mm-hmm. They're rested. Colorado is most certainly not. I realize that Andre Pavlik's out of the lineup. But if you're really serious about getting in back into the playoffs, run again, one game does not make a season, but that's just a game you have to have against a team that's not very good, that's not very deep, that relies a ton on their top players. I know their goaltender was very good yesterday, but a team that's not very deep on the end of a 7-game road trip on a home game, you have to take advantage of that. And I just thought that they squandered an opportunity, to put it that way.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll discuss the ramifications of Andre Pavlik's knee injury. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. The Tuesday evening edition of NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Richard Pollock, and Ezra Ginsberg. And Illegal Curve Hockey is thrilled to be participating in the Riverview Health Center Foundation Cycle on Life coming up on June the 5th, 2016. Join Illegal Curve in raising money for the Riverview Health Center by cycling in the event yourself or contributing to Team Illegal Curve. For more information about the Riverview Health Center Foundation Cycle on Life or to join Team Illegal Curve in the cycle, visit rhcf.mb.ca.
So Richie and I are actually going to be on a tandem.
Oh, that's cute.
For this cycle.
Let me ask you this. I know that you recently, within the last year or 2 years, bought a bike, right?
Yeah, I own a bike.
Yeah, you own a bike. Yeah. It's gathering dust more than anything.
It's known as a hybrid.
Oh, yeah. In that it also operates as what? Not a
lazy
bike.
Boy.
Yeah, it's also, you also use it as a, just to prop yourself up on in your living room or something?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. It's that or some cross between a mountain bike and a cyclocross bike or something like that. But yeah, I don't use it very much.
Yeah, but it's a
nice
bike.
I'm going to use it for this.
Yes, you're going to use it for this because we're participating in this event. We're thrilled about that. Richie, when was the last time you rode a bike?
Aside from the retro bikes that Ezzy and I rode with a friend of ours this summer, which is probably the first time, no lie, I've been on a bike in at least 15 years. At least.
Can I hear more
Maybe
about
20 years.
The retro bikes you guys rode?
Yeah, there's a picture of it on our Illegal Curve Instagram.
Oh, okay.
Shameless plug.
There you go. You can check
Ezzy,
us out on Instagram.
Dave and I are in a picture.
Oh, okay.
It's actually a really nice ride.
The brain trust, I was nowhere to be seen, of course.
Yeah. We rode around River Heights, and then we went and got some ice cream. It was a nice little Saturday afternoon.
That is very nice. Did you guys go to Bed Bath & Beyond, or there wasn't enough time?
No, there wasn't enough time.
Okay, I understand.
But I'm very excited to participate in this, because anything I can do to reduce my obesity is a good thing. So,
well, you know,
and we're going to raise some money.
Yeah.
I love raising money. I'm raising money for Movember. I love to raise money for good causes, and we're going to be totally down for this, and we hope other people join our team. Right?
Absolutely. Check it out, rhcf.mb.ca, to join Team Illegal Curve in the Riverview Health Center Foundation Cycle on Life. Goaltending for the Winnipeg Jets. You know, Andre Pavlik goes out with the knee injury. We saw it all happen on Saturday evening at MTS Center. You thought maybe at first he dodged a bullet and that he was able to finish the second period. But when he didn't come out for third period, and then I believe it was Sean Churchill reported that he was seen leaving the arena on crutches, you knew that it was a bad situation for Andre Pavlik and for the Winnipeg Jets. How significant of a loss is it in your mind? I mean, Andre Pavlik certainly gets a lot of slings and arrows from people in Winnipeg and in the general hockey community who thinks he's the big problem with the Winnipeg Jets. But is this a big deal? You know, not a huge loss, or somewhere in between?
Well, guys, it's a significant loss because it's the Jets' number one goalie, period, right? It's their goalie that has the most experience. Mm-hmm. It's the goalie that got shutouts last year that got this team into the playoffs. So, of course, it's significant, and it's unfortunate for Andre Pavlik, because I think he's been playing pretty well this year. Maybe not so much on that road trip where they lost all those games, but I think for the most part, he's had a pretty good season. And I realize that him and Michael Hutchinson have been splitting the duties, but this is a great opportunity for Connor Hellebuyck. And many people thought that the Jets might give Connor Hellebuyck a try maybe earlier in the season, as opposed to maybe waiting for an injury. Obviously, they weren't waiting for this injury to happen, but meaning that it was an injury that got the call up for Connor Hellebuyck. So, I mean, it's a great opportunity for him, and it's a great opportunity for Michael Hutchinson, because Michael Hutchinson, even though he was the number one goaltender for a brief period last year, now this is his net. And Connor Hellebuck's going to get some opportunities in net. I would expect him to get one game this weekend, either against Minnesota or Colorado. But this is Michael Hutchinson's net now. So I don't think that the Jets are concerned at all right now, because they know that Michael Hutchinson was very good for them last year, and they know that Connor Hellebuyck has been very good in the AHL, and before that, he was really good in NCAA. So it's a significant loss, but I don't think this is going to be something that leads to the Jets' demise by any stretch of the imagination, Drew.
You know, it's this is a tough one to predict. I mean, what really do we know about this team without Andre Pavlik? For the most part, he's been the number one guy. I mean, last year, for that period of time where Hutchinson kind of got the reins, he struggled, it seemed like, with either the pressure, the playing time. I mean, there's many factors there. We don't know what it was. So we'll see in this prolonged period of time here how Hutchinson's how he'll fare as the number one goaltender without Pavlik looking over his shoulder. Now, I mean, Hellebuyck, people are always clamoring for the next young guy, for the backup goalie. I mean, it could be the old backup goalie. They're always clamoring for the backup, or almost always, and then especially if it's a young gun, they're clamoring for the backup. So he'll get his opportunity here, very possibly in a back-to-back situation on Friday, Saturday. And, you know, I haven't seen him play enough to speak to whether or not I think he'll perform, but I'm interested to see how he performs. I just don't know. It's such a wild card here. And the thing about Pavlik is you may say, oh, you kind of know what you're getting, and you may not like it, but you have an idea of what you're getting, and that unpredictability probably leaves the coach and the players a little bit uneasy and probably somewhat curious.
But Richie, even if you've watched every single one of Connor Hellebuyck's games with the Manitoba Moose, which none of us have, obviously.
It's true.
We've watched some. But you don't know how he's going to perform at the NHL level, and you don't know how he's going to perform when he's in a situation where the Jets need a win.
Absolutely
right. So the Winnipeg Jets are in a position right now that, they're not out of a playoff position by any stretch of the imagination. They're right in it. But because they lost those six games in a row, and they lost the game last night versus the Colorado Avalanche, They need wins. So whether Connor Hellebuyck goes in Friday versus Minnesota, which is an afternoon game, by the way.
3 o'clock.
Or it's Saturday versus Colorado.
9 o'clock.
You know that they're going to need that win, and they're going to need good goaltending out of him. And based on his track record, there's no reason to believe that he's not going to be good for the Winnipeg Jets, but we just don't know. He hasn't played an NHL regular season game yet, right? But I'm in the camp that think he is going to be a really good NHL goalie. He's really young, too. He's only in his early 20s, right? So this is his first opportunity, and it's great for him because he probably didn't think he was going to get it until at the very least later in the season, right? But I think also going back to Michael Hutchinson too, I think Michael Hutchinson last night was the victim of some bad luck. We mentioned the first goal goes off of a skate. That was Carl Soderberg's goal. Mm-hmm. And then the second goal goes off of Cody McLeod's skate. So I think Michael Hutchinson, sure, maybe should, you know, he needed that stop on Matt Duchene in the third period. That was a tough one, right, though? Duchene's a pretty good goal scorer. So you got to give him the benefit of the doubt. Maybe one bad goal yesterday, right? And then, of course, the Como empty netter. But I think Michael Hutchinson has proven that he can be the number one goaltender for the Winnipeg Jets. So I'm not as worried. I think it's unfortunate that Pavlik went down, but I think the Jets have two good young goalies here.
Color me skeptical on whether or not Michael Hutchinson's going to be able to carry the ball in Pavlik's absence. I've just seen troubling signs, I thought, from his play, over the last 3 weeks to a month, that leaves me with questions whether or not he can be a number one goaltender for the next month or 6 weeks or 8 weeks. I think I'm fairly certain I know that he can't be a number one goaltender over an entirety of an NHL season, but I do have legitimate concerns, I think, if he can even handle that responsibility for a month or 6 weeks, which is why I would not be surprised to see Connor Hellebuyck. Everybody knows he's going to play, because they've already come out and said he's going to play. The absence is long enough that you're going to have to. I mean, they have back-to-backs every week, I believe, for the next 3 weeks, the Winnipeg Jets do. And they have the back-to-back Friday, Saturday this week. They have a back-to-back Saturday, Sunday next week when they play Washington, then go on the road to Chicago the next day. So they have the back-to-backs that is going to get Connor Hellebuyck the action. And I'm just, I hope he proves me wrong. But something about his play this year just leaves me with concern about if Michael Hutchinson can run with the job for the next 6 to 8 weeks.
Drew, I think that's fair to be skeptical. I think there's a lot of uncertainty. I do think Ezra's point's well taken too, in terms of, hey, you need wins now.
Sure.
I mean, growing pains.
When was the last time Rich called me Ezra, by the way?
I'm not sure. It's probably been 20 years.
Well, you're looking sharp today. You're on the mend a bit, but you're looking
wearing
sharp.
Wearing pants, put it that way.
Yeah, well, we think you are. You like Kornheiser wearing a suit and then sandals at the bottom.
Yeah. Let me ask you guys this question. Yeah. With the goaltender going down.
Sorry to cut off your point, by the way, Richie.
It wasn't that good of a point anyways.
Completely
got
you off your train of thought.
With the goaltender going down, do you think that this might be sort of a galvanizing opportunity for the Jets to get back to the defensive ways that they did last year?
Absolutely, Drew. I mean, last year they were missing four top defensemen, and that gave guys like Ben Sherratt and Adam Partey an opportunity, and they did a great job. And that's probably one of the reasons why Ben Sherratt was given a starting D role with the Jets. And then, unfortunately, he struggled a little bit, so Adam Partey's come in. But I absolutely think this is galvanizing part of this season. Drew, if the Jets don't make some hay here and start winning games, and I'm not just talking about two, they need to go on kind of a win 7 of 10 type of run here,
they're gonna
be out of a playoff spot, because right now they're sixth in the Central Division, and even though they're only a couple points behind Chicago, as we talked about last segment, they're not out of it, but they need to get wins. So this next 2 or 3 weeks here, we talked about it, you got a couple of games against Chicago next week on the road, you got a couple of games against Washington coming up, including tomorrow night. I mean, they've got some difficult teams to play here, and whether it's Michael Hutchinson or Connor Hellebuyck in net, they're going to have to get wins, or they're going to fall out of it. As we know, if you're 3 or 4 points out of a playoff spot come January, it's a lot more difficult to make the playoffs as opposed to being ahead of that line, right? So I absolutely think this is one of the key moments of the season, if not the most crucial moments of the season, because they're in a losing streak here. They're in a bit of a funk. Mm-hmm. And as Richie mentioned, since Atlanta came over to Winnipeg, this is the first time Andre Pavlik has had a significant injury like this. This is the first time they've had anyone else take over the goal, right? It didn't happen with Chris Mason or Al Montoya. And it happened a little bit with Michael Hutchinson, but Pavlik wasn't injured when that happened. So I absolutely think this is a galvanizing moment.
Hutchinson's also better than Mason and Montoya were.
That's true.
A little younger, more potential. Certainly, as Blake Wheeler stated this week, you know, kind of worked his way up and then earned his way onto the squad. It's a different level to be starting night in, night out. The wear and tear, the pressure. And again, he's behind the eight ball here. So it's going to be interesting. Hellebuck is going to be in a pressure situation too. Now, it's possible the Jets continue to struggle and then the pressure is less on him because the team's expectations have been lowered. But I don't think that's certainly not in the immediate future. So we'll see. But it's possible that if the Jets continue to struggle, that the pressure on Hellebuck will be less because Pavlik is out for an extended period.
Time will tell to see how the Winnipeg Jets handle the Pavlik injury. I'm pleased to announce we just did the promo for the Riverview Health Center Foundation. We already have our first team member.
Do we?
Yeah, producer Alex. He's a big cyclist. He's already signed up.
Awesome.
There you go. So team Alex is on Team Illegal Curve.
Atta boy,
for
Alex.
The Riverview Health Center Foundation.
We're happy
cycle
to have
on
Alex
life.
On board.
We are, because there's at least one person on our team now who actually can cycle legitimately.
Can we subtract you off the team and then because we have Alex now?
You could do that. Yeah, you could. That's not really
that'd
nice
easy,
to me.
That'd be great.
Yeah.
I just want to bike on a tandem bike with you around town. Just wave at everybody.
I think it would make perfect sense for you guys. Let's head to break. When we come back, Washington Capitals broadcaster Joe Beninati is going to join us. Shortly after 6:30 in the evening, welcome back to NHL This Week. Drew Mundell alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. This segment brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, a proper fitting custom-made mouth guard is a must-have piece of protective equipment. Don't be an Ezzy. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center 204-487-2226 or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program Washington Capitals play-by-play broadcaster on CSN Mid-Atlantic, Joe Beninati. Joe, good evening, and thanks very much for joining us.
Drew, Ezra, Richard, my pleasure. It's fun to talk with you guys. It must be getting colder because Winnipeg's in town. All of a sudden, the temperatures decide to dip into the 30s here in the nation's capital. I'm not so sure about what that means. It must mean it's wintertime. That's what it means.
It might mean it's wintertime in Washington. That means it's about mid-July in Winnipeg based on...
I was going to say, that's nothing for you guys.
Yeah, it's beautiful here right now,
yeah,
Joe.
Exactly. We can walk around in shorts and flip-flops and with snow on the ground. We're old pros of that sort of weather thing, eh, there, Joe?
I'll take that if you give it to me 10 days from now when we're in Winnipeg.
Yeah, well, the long-term forecast does say that it should be okay for you guys. It won't be nearly as bad as I'm sure some of the visits were back in the Southeast Division days when you guys would come up to Winnipeg a little bit more often.
Ain't that the truth? And then the other thing is you play two games. You know, these teams were, I want to say they were division mates for a long time. They were division mates for 13 years, and you'd play a lot more than just the two times we're going to see each other in the next 10 days.
You're 100% right about that. It should be an interesting battle two times over the next 10 days. I mean, Jets, you know, been struggling over their last, 10 games. They're 3-6 in their last nine, but the Washington Capitals just keep churning along in that Metropolitan Division, 14-5-1. On the season with, a tremendous record. They only trail the juggernaut New York Rangers right now. I mean, from the Capitals' perspective, you know, as they're, you know, they've gotten off to this great start, they came so close to making it to the Eastern Conference Finals last season. Is it sort of Eastern Conference Finals, Stanley Cup Final, or bust this year? Is that the mentality in Washington?
Oh, I'm pretty sure that they won't admit to it, but I think that that's the case. And first and foremost, guys, they have already achieved one of their goals. You know, they list a lengthy amount of items on a goal sheet for the team, and one of those was to start quickly. They had a middling sort of 500-type start to Barry Trotz's first season in Washington. Everybody, from the top to the bottom, was demanding of a quick start this season, and they've done that this fall. Winning for 14 of their first 20, I think that would suffice. Hitting the quarter pole the way they are. The trouble is the darn Rangers never lose, and the darn Rangers never lose at Madison Square Garden, so it's hard to gain ground on them. But this team on paper, to me, fellas, looks even better than the one that was the President's Trophy winner in 2010. And I know on paper doesn't mean a hill of beans, But I like the way this team is shaping up. And just for example, a game last night where in seasons past they wouldn't have won that game. Edmonton would have won that hockey game. Braden Holtby steals it for them. And to me, it's a sign that a team is growing and maturing and can figure out how to win when it's not necessarily playing its best.
You know, Joe, you just mentioned Braden Holtby, and it was pretty funny because Justin Williams flattened him in practice. Of course, it was an accident, and he was okay. But, you know, I know Richie is a huge Braden Holtby fan, and I think that he's got a good chance of being Canada's goalie, one of Canada's goalies at the World Cup of Hockey and probably in the Olympics as well. He's played 16 of the first 20 games. As you mentioned, he got the shutout last night. His numbers are incredible. Is there more of an effort this year for Barry Trotz and the coaching staff to maybe play him less? He played 73 games last year, or do you think he's got a chance to play 70-plus games again this year?
Well, I think he's going to be touching that number again pretty darn close. You know, Barry listens to Mitch Korn quite a bit, and that's a continuation of their friendship and coaching relationship from Nashville. And when Pekka Rinne was healthy, Pekka would go that many times. And Braden has been healthy as a horse, keeps himself in great shape. I think Braden has grown, you know, more than anything, guys, between the years. I mean, it's the mental concentration that's required of a goalie to play that many times. I think Braden will be the first to admit he gets more tired mentally than physically. These guys are all such incredible athletes, but I think Braden has learned how to juggle things even on the practice days, on the off days, more so mentally than physically, to keep himself prepared and be sharp. And his performance last night was, I mean, literally otherworldly at times. And I agree with you. I think he's going to be right there with Carey Price and with Marc-Andre Fleury for the Canadian World Cup team in the future.
You know, Joe, we're on the third question here. We're not going to yet ask you about Alex Ovechkin. We're going to first start, which is probably rare in most interviews, with Evgeny Kuznetsov. He's at just over a point a game right now. I mean, we've seen flashes in the past of his skill level. Why is it starting to come together for him more so than in the past?
He's so confident now in his own skin, and the coaching staff has expressed faith in him. You know, this time last year, guys, there's no way that Kuznetsov is playing on a top six in a top 1-2 type center role. He just wasn't capable, I thought, more than anything, defensively in Barry Trotz's mind. But that's changed. I think Barry's comfortable going power for power, strength against strength, top line against top line, and whether that be Kuznetsov or Backstrom. Trotz will be the first guy to tell you he thinks Nicklas Backstrom is arguably a Selke Award winner and deserves consideration for that he's right there with the Bergerons and Taves and Kopitars, the guys who are there annually in that description. Barry thinks Backstrom is that type of player. Kuznetsov isn't that type of player defensively yet, but on the offensive end, his skills are sublime. And I keep going back to something that TJ Oshie said, and TJ is by no way an old man at age 28, but when he first walked into the dressing room, first got used to the training camp atmosphere, TJ mentioned to me, he said, there's no way that Kuznetsov kid is 23 years old. He's just so much more mature, and now we're seeing the fruits of that on the ice.
You're listening to NHL This Week. Our guest is Washington Capitals play-by-play broadcaster Joe Beninati. Joe, you just mentioned TJ Oshie. Of course, the Capitals acquired him in the offseason from the Blues in exchange for Troy Brouwer. How has Oshie fit into the Capitals lineup? How has he looked in the first 20 games as a member of the Capitals?
Drew, Richard, Ezra, he and Justin Williams have been a nice fit. They really have been. TJ's frustrated with himself right now because he's playing with Backstrom and Ovechkin. He's getting a ton of offensive chances. The puck just won't go for him. The reason I thought he would be a first-time 30-goal scorer this year is because I really thought he was going to get prime time on the power play, be the inside guy, you know, the guy inside the diamond in that 1-3-1 look. That was a place where Troy Brouwer and Joel Ward had flourished in recent seasons, and I think TJ is going to do that even before this year is through. But two of his five goals so far have been power plays. He had a game against Colorado a couple nights ago where he had at least four golden chances from the slot on the power play. So the shots are going to go, the goals are going to go for TJ, but I think he and Justin Williams have done a really nice job of getting themselves acclimated, and credit to their teammates for getting them right into the fabric right away. It's just, like I said, on paper now, when you put that lineup together, it looks awfully good.
Okay, Joe, here comes the Alexander Ovechkin question.
Yay!
And it's not going to be whether or not you think that he's the best Russian player of all time, because, of course, last week he passed Sergei Fedorov for most goals all time by a Russian-born player. But Alexander Ovechkin, you have followed him since he came into the NHL 10 years ago, and he's still got 10 goals, and he's still probably going to end up with 50 goals by the end of the season, because that's what he does. But over the years, as you've followed him, does he seem like a player this year that's more determined to finally get this team into a Stanley Cup final and sacrifice goals for defense and really take this team to the next level?
I wish I can do the proper job of expressing this, because I've been there with Alex on the planes, on the bus rides, in the elevators, when the games in the playoffs haven't gone his way and his team's way. And I've seen him be crushed. I've seen him be disappointed. And I know that he would trade all the Rocket Richards and the MVPs for the chance to hold that cup over his head in June. And that is what is going to matter to him. And he's going to crash over 500, 600, who knows how far many goals on an individual basis before his time is through. He is, in my opinion, the best goal scorer on the planet, and I know Steven Stamkos is fabulous, and there are a bunch of other guys, and Patrick Kane's having this kind of year, and you could just keep itemizing all of them, but raw goal-scoring talent, to me, it's Alex Ovechkin. But the goals individually aren't necessarily as important as the teams, and I think that's the maturity of a player. All of a sudden, gosh, this guy's an 11-year pro. Where does the time go? He's 30 years old. There is a maturation that comes there. I remember him when he was 19, when he first showed up at Verizon Center, and there was no ice on the floor. There was just a subfloor, but you could feel the heartbeat out of his chest. Can I go and skate? Can I go and skate? His love for the game, I think, has stayed the same from his boyhood years through now when he's 30. But what burns, I think, most inside of him is to get this team over the hump, to have it reach the championship level. And I know how much it means to him. I've seen him crushed in disappointment when it doesn't go his way. And I think that this team, perhaps, is the best one the Caps organization has ever put around him in that quest.
It seems to me that is the case, Joe. And final question for you. You know, Barry Trotz, you mentioned him before, Mitch Korn, the coaching staff as a whole. It seems like this group, and it's partially probably due to the players that they've been given, maybe in large part, but is buying in more so than other groups? Maybe you can speak to that more so, obviously, from us from afar. But, you know, you've had Bruce Boudreau and Dale Hunter and Adam Oates and different guys, all well-respected within the game. But why is Barry Trotz maybe getting through to these players more so than others?
Instant credibility last year. You think about it, you mentioned the names there. Even when Bruce Boudreau, who was fabulously successful in Washington from a win standpoint, Boudreau never had any head coaching experience at the NHL level when he was hired. Same for Adam Oates, same for Dale Hunter, same for Glenn Hanlon, same for Bruce Cassidy.
Yeah.
And then here's Barry Trotz, who's on the verge of 1,300 NHL games. There was that instant credibility factor and the belief that this team could be balanced, that it didn't have to just be a highlight machine, a high-wire act. And all of a sudden, you look at it statistically, and I'm not huge for analytics, but if you look at the numbers, this team still does have its offensive punch, and then it's right there with the New York Rangers as far as goals against average is concerned. This team can still bring you out of its seat with tremendous offensive tic-tac-toe plays, and at the same time, surrenders the fewest shots on goal in the league. It's exactly the balance that Barry Trotz wanted for this squad, and now in year two, I think we're finally seeing, it didn't take long, but we're seeing that all of the players on this team believe in the scheme and think that they can execute it at the highest level.
Joe Beninati is the Washington Capitals play-by-play broadcaster on CSN Mid-Atlantic. Joe, always appreciate your time. Great insight into the Capitals. Have a great call tomorrow evening, and we'll see you in Winnipeg in about 10 days' time.
Guys, my pleasure. Stay warm.
Thanks, Joe. Take care. Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to preview the Jets and the Capitals. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. 10 minutes before the top of the hour, welcome back to NHL This Week with Illegal Curve Hockey. This segment brought to you by our friends at Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and the home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich, conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark. in the Cordon Village Mall. Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook at bernsteinsdeli.com. Big thanks, of course, to Joe Beninati, Washington Capitals play-by-play broadcaster, for joining us. In case you missed any of that interview, it will be available on iTunes, on tsn1290.ca, and, of course, on illegalcurve.com. We mentioned Alex Ovechkin's 484th goal, breaking the record held by Sergei Fedorov. Here's how that goal sounded.
Time's a wasted now in the third. Ovechkin on the go. Alex pulls up. Deflection try. Good save. Lehtinen. Oshie to the goal mouth there. Backhand. Score! Alex Ovechkin has done it. The greatest Russian goal scorer the NHL has ever seen.
The greatest Russian goal scorer, and probably, would you put him up in there? Top five all-time NHL goal scorers?
Yeah, I would, for sure.
I mean, he's sort of under, is he possibly underappreciated?
No.
Let me ask you this. I mean, we've had this conversation before, so forget it. I mean, I know that if he wins a cup, the Crosby Ovechkin arguments really get heated up yet again. But let's talk about tomorrow night's game between the Jets and the Capitals. The Jets are a team not with a ton of confidence, a team that's been struggling. The Washington Capitals score a ton of goals. They don't give up very many goals at all. They've given up the second fewest goals in the entire NHL. Hard to believe you say that of a Washington Capitals team. They've scored the sixth most goals in the NHL. It seems like this is a bit of a recipe for disaster for the Winnipeg Jets entering tomorrow night.
Yeah, and you just mentioned something, Drew, that I think is the most important about this Washington Capitals team that separates this team and last year's team. I would put in that same category, because I think that Washington Capitals team, you know, if they get a couple of breaks, Richie, they could be going to the Eastern Conference Finals and, pardon me, going to the Stanley Cup Finals against the Chicago Blackhawks. It's that they're better defensively, and they have a goalie now that is the best goalie that they've had in recent memory, going back to Olaf Kolzig, probably. But you look at how Barry Trotz has shaped this team into what he wants this team to be, and we know they're good offensively, as you mentioned, Drew, and the special teams are excellent. They have the fifth-best penalty kill in the NHL, seventh-best power play in the NHL. They're really good at everything, Richie. And to me, that's what's difficult about playing this Washington Capitals team, is that not only do you have to worry about Ovechkin and Backstrom's line, you have to worry about Evgeny Kuznetsov's line. You have to worry about John Carlson and Matt Niskanen jumping up into the play. They're sixth in the NHL in points by defensemen, and they get a lot of points from their defensemen. Their defensemen love to jump up into the rush, and it's not just one or two guys. Even guys like Carl Alzner, who's a defensive defenseman, they jump up into the rush. So this team, You have a lot to worry about when you play this team, Richie. And as we saw last night, the Edmonton Oilers peppered 30-plus shots at Braden Holtby, and he stopped every single one of them. So if you're finding if you can find a weakness, Rich, in this team, let me know, because I can't see one.
Well, I don't think there's one. I picked him to win the cup.
It's true, you did. Maybe the Jets get lucky and they give Holtby the night off.
You don't know. I mean, anything can happen, obviously, in one game. But as he makes a lot of good points in terms of the quality. I called you Ezzy there. You catch that? in terms of the quality of what they bring to the table. But, I mean,
Call me Ezra.
Let's be honest here. The Jets take a lot of penalties, and the Capitals' power play has such dynamic talent. That's my main concern, first and foremost. You need to stay out of the box. You're going to be at a serious disadvantage if you put yourself on the PK continually. Of course, it hurts your ability to score, but you have to defend, and this team is tough to defend. This team's tough to defend at all levels. Matchup-wise, it's going to be a battle, and you know, you're picking your poison here. They have two really good scoring lines, and I think what I like about this squad is that they have an identity. We've talked about it on the show. They have guys who can score, guys who can check, defensemen who can play defensively, defensemen who can contribute offensively. They don't score at the expense of defense. That's why these stats are so tremendous, as he talks about, and you talked about it, Drew. Six most goals for, second least goals against. And that is the epitome of creating offense and not at the expense of defense. So for the Jets, that means you have to play a structured game. And you're simply not going to be able to play like you did yesterday when you have the puck a lot, and it's not going to happen. You're going to be defending more. So when you're defending, And this has been a bit of a problem for the Jets. Can you stay structured? Can you stay within your positions? Can you make the simple play and not try to overcomplicate it? I have concerns in terms of checking lines against, you know, the Jets. Are they really able to, like, what's their identity for a checking line here? They've tried with Lowry. Obviously, Lowry's now on the wing, and they've done different things to try and get him off the Schneid. I don't disagree with, you know, in terms of taking pressure off him and such, but it's going to be tough. You know, the five-man unit checking, we talk about defense matchups against forwards all the time, but it's also you need forwards. And as he mentions, the defense jumping into the play for Washington, your forwards need to be very aware. Even Matthew Perreault yesterday, you know, Hutchinson, the second goal, the puck pops off of McLeod, right? And the second goal there in front with Stewart on him. But, I mean, the play actually really happens with Redmond jumping past Matthew Perreault.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a collective effort here.
And the Jets can absolutely go into Washington and beat the Capitals. They went into New York earlier this season and beat the Rangers. And
they're playing way better against at that time, I think.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Point well taken by both of you.
If the Winnipeg Jets play their A game, and they played their A game for the large majority, I feel, of the second half of last season and the early part of this season, they can beat anybody. And I think with this Washington Capitals team, to Richie's point, I think that you have to take advantages of the chances that you get. You know, Drew, you mentioned that they're one of the best defensive teams in the NHL. With that, they don't give up a lot of shots. They're second in the NHL in shots against. It's something like 26 shots against for the Washington Capitals. So they don't give up a lot of shots.
26, exactly.
And Braden Holtby stops most of those shots. His mm-hmm. goals against right now is under 2. Holtby's having a phenomenal season. If you're going to award the Vezina based on 20 games, you'd give it to Holtby, I think, right now, in my opinion.
9.26 save percentage, yep. Or 1.88 goals against.
What do we think for matchups here, though, in terms of the Jets? I mean, I think you look at it, and, you know, who do Myers and Enstrom draw? That's the thing, because in reality, against Backstrom, Oshie, and Ovechkin, if that's the line, I mean, they can beat you any which way. I think you're probably still trusting those guys. I think you're probably going to make them draw, Enstrom and Myers draw that line. I think Kuznetsov, Johansson, and Williams, you're probably looking at Bufflin and whether they play him with Trouba or Party. We'll see.
Yeah.
But there's tough matchups there. The quickness thing is an issue. And that first line, I mean, that first line is two of the most dominant players in the National Hockey League, Nicholas Backstrom and Alex Ovechkin. And then you have Oshie to be able to complement it. It's a tough one tomorrow. And again, anything can happen on any given night, but
it's hard to go into tomorrow's game with a good feeling as a fan of the Winnipeg Jets.
Yeah, just because of, you know, being able to have the last change too is going to be a problem. And, you know, the Jets' third line, as it be right now, is what Bremestrov, Ehlers, and Thorburn. They're going to get trapped out there against some of these good lines. That's what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And you're not going to feel as comfortable putting out Kopp, Lowry, and Peluso guys when you don't have Colorado's bottom six, not only home ice, but Colorado's bottom six to play against.
And I mean, not that there's no real reason to look at the fourth line matchups as you know, a big factor, as a huge factor, but the Capitals' fourth line of Brooks Like and Michael Ladin, I mean, Tom Wilson is a bulldozer out there. He's gonna go through people. I mean,
The Jets have the guys to handle that.
They have the guys to handle it, but yeah. I mean, they also have more skill on that fourth line than the Jets do.
I told Rich this.
That's true.
The first week of the season, the first game I watched the Washington Capitals, yeah. And Rich picked them, as he mentioned, to win the Stanley Cup. I said, I'm looking at one of the best teams in the NHL. Because as you just mentioned, they have the skill. They have an overabundance of skill with Ovechkin and Backstrom and Oshie and Kuznetsov. And as you mentioned, Drew, they've got guys like Tom Wilson. They've got guys like Jason Chimera. They've got guys like Carl Alsner, guys that can play the physical game, good, mm-hmm. smart defensive. That's right. A completely balanced team.
Mm-hmm.
To me, this is a dream team for Barry Trotz, and I think Barry Trotz is one of the best coaches in the NHL. He might end up, you know, winning coach of the year depending on what happens. I know there's some other.
I thought Todd Richards was going to.
Yeah, I'll stay out of that, I guess. But I think, point being that, you know, Trotz, you know, good Dauphin boy, is one of the better coaches, and he seems to always get the best out of his players. And as Richie mentioned, the identity and the roles. You know those top two lines can score. And you know if you need a goal, like a guy like Andrei Burakovsky, who was on the second line last year for Washington, he's on the third line there with Chimera and Jay Beagle. That's more of a kind of defensive shutdown line, but they can also score too if they need to. So you look at this team, and we talked about how good they've been on the PK, how good they are in the power play. They don't give up a lot of shots. The Jets, even though They're coming into this game off of a loss. I think this will be a close game. I think the Jets can win this game. I'm not going to go ahead and make predictions. I think it'll be a close one. But you have to take advantage of your opportunities. And against the Colorado Avalanche, they didn't do that. Against the Capitals, they're just not going to get as many opportunities.
Is Orpik declared as playing or not playing? We don't know yet.
Likely out is my understanding. We'll find out for sure tomorrow, of course, when they do the line rushes in the morning. But he's day-to-day, and I don't believe he skated today with the Capitals.
That's a big – I mean, again, Brooks Orpik is not certainly an offensively inclined defenseman and doesn't skate particularly well.
He's a top pairing guy for them.
Well, he compliments John Carlson well, and you know he gives him he's going to be solid. He's tough to play against.
Yep.
I don't mind his first, but he makes a good first pass. So he plays a nice simple game. Kind of Alzner kind of plays a similar game, obviously younger. So that's a bigger loss. And Nate Schmidt jumping into that spot, the Jets should be able to take a little bit of advantage of that. It's a big difference.
We'll find out tomorrow. Puck drop at 6 p.m. here on TSN 1290 and, of course, on TSN 3 television. Let's head to break when we come back. Carey Fraser, you know him from the TSN.ca feature. Come on, Ref, you know him from his years as an NHL official. He's going to join us next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Second hour of NHL This Week for this Tuesday, 24th of November. Drew Mindell alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program Carey Fraser. Carey is the author of TSN.ca's feature Come On Ref, and of course was an NHL official for probably the best known NHL official for close to two decades. Carey, good evening, and thanks very much for joining us on the program.
Drew and Richard, it's great to be with you, and I'm sorry to correct you, but it's three decades. I was 30 years
in
the NHL, so saw some of the greatest.
Well, you have seen some of the greatest. My apologies for shorting you 10 years. It's just because you looked so young, Carey, that I couldn't possibly believe you'd been out there for 30 years.
Drew's never been good at math.
Drew's a suck-up.
I'll take it as a compliment. Thank you.
It certainly is. Carey obviously brought you on to talk about some of the ins and outs of officiating and the NHL season so far. We had Chris King from the NHL Hockey Operations Department on our Saturday program a couple days ago, and we were discussing with him, you know, the video review and the expanded video review and the coach's challenge. I want to start with the coach's challenge because that's the sort of the brand new feature to the game. From a former official's perspective, how do you think the coach's challenge has been handled so far by the NHL, by its officials, and of course by the players as well?
Well, I think it's been terrific. It's a real positive addition. And for 4 years, I was lobbying on Come On Ref on TSN.ca and even on your radio program that the most difficult call that the referees had to make was goalie interference. With all of the crashing and bodies going to the net in real time, it was extremely difficult. And those of us that were watching the game on TV or had a replay had the benefit of knowing exactly what happened while the poor officials on the ice were trying to sort it out from the one vantage point that they had in that moment in time. So it's really been a terrific a tool. We've had many coaches' reviews. A lot of decisions that the referees initially made on the ice have been overturned and the right calls made. There are other times where we see teams, coaches, assistant coaches in the sky that don't quite have a handle on the criteria yet as to what the referees are going to employ when they look at a coach's challenge. Offside at the blue line, it's academic. It's like a ball or a strike or an out at first base. It's mechanical. But when you get into goalie interference, there's a lot of variables, and it can go one way or the other in certain cases.
Carey, to get away from the coach's challenge for a second, as you know, the Winnipeg Jets are the most penalized team in the NHL right now, and some fans, especially ones that are calling into some of the shows on the station, seem to think there's some type of league-wide bias by the referees, which I think is completely ridiculous. But the question I have for you, though, is, when you were a referee and you knew that a certain team was one of the most penalized teams in the NHL, did you look at them more closely, or how did you treat those teams that you knew that were some of the most penalized teams in the league?
Well, teams generally earned the penalties that they incurred. regardless of what referee it was. I didn't look at their stat sheet and see that they were the most penalized team, whether it was the Broad Street Bullies or the Big Bad Bruins. They tend to, just show up. Their style of play is more aggressive. I'm a little surprised by the Jets, and they've taken a lot of penalties in the last couple of years. Paul Maurice is really a disciplined guy. He's cerebral. And I find it a little disconcerting that his team is playing with a style that causes them to take penalties as much as they are. There's certain players that play a certain way. I just spent a day with Chris Knuckles Nyland. We did a radio show on TSN Radio in Montreal. Knux was a guy that I kept my eye on, not because he had a whole bunch of penalty stats, but because I knew I had to keep an eye on him because he would do things that were illegal if I let him. So players do develop a reputation with referees. Every referee knows who he has to watch and who he can tend, based on their style of play, to kind of let go a little bit. But it really confuses me a little bit that the Winnipeg Jets, with the speed that they have and the coach behind the bench, that they're taking as many penalties, needless penalties, as they are.
Kerry, back to the replay, the coach's challenge. Now, is there one thing, and we asked Chris King about this as well, and I think it seems to make sense to me to have the delay of game penalty, throwing the puck over the glass in your own zone, and whether it's tipped by a stick or hits the glass, to have that reviewable. He said, that was considered, but it wasn't factored into the first go-around here. What are your thoughts on that, and if maybe you agree or disagree? And if you disagree, would there be another penalty or something else that you'd like to see reviewed that currently isn't?
Well, first of all, I think that this is a test case with the two situations. I don't think that the general managers and the rules committee wanted to go whole hog. And I think it's working very, very well for the most part. Puck over the glass is really difficult. Unless a team in the playoffs, their fans are wearing white jerseys, once that puck goes over the glass, it can easily be lost in the dark clothing of the winter or above the lights. And it's really a difficult thing. I never followed the puck. If I was watching the puck all the time, if I became a puck watcher, mm-hmm. I felt that I would be missing something that would be more important relative to a potential foul. So if the puck was over my head, I didn't turn and look away. I kept my eyes focused on the players that potentially could create a foul in front of the net. And the same thing with the linesmen. I mean, they have specific duties. So short answer, yes, I think puck over glass, because it's an automatic penalty. If it's done in error, it can be game-changing or right. game-ending. So I think it really needs to be addressed.
Our guest on NHL This Week is Kerry Fraser. He's a longtime NHL official. You know him from his column on TSN.ca called Come On Ref. Kerry, on Saturday night, the Jets and the Coyotes played here in Winnipeg, and late in the first period, both Anthony Duclair and Nikolai Ehlers were called for simultaneous penalties. Duclair was called for interference, and Ehlers was called for embellishment on the exact same play. As an official, When you see a guy embellishing it, you deem it a penalty. How difficult is it to take both guys, in that instance, or is there an inclination to maybe take the worst of the offending parties as opposed to both guys at the same time?
Well, I'm asked that question an awful lot, and I just spent the weekend with the Montreal Canadian Fantasy Camp group. A lot of Western Canada participants came, fellows from Winnipeg, to be part of this camp, and Friday night, after the Habs played in Long Island in Brooklyn against the Islanders, we did a tour. Stefan Quintel gave the guys a tour of the Department of Player Safety. We had a discussion about that very issue, and Stefan and I were asked our perspective on it, how there can be two penalties on one play. And I said that when you identify the first foul as a referee and your arm is up and you've made your mind it's a penalty, then the player that was fouled legitimately does an unnatural fall in an attempt to draw the penalty, mm-hmm. then it's showing disrespect for the game more than just disrespect for the official. And it needs to be addressed. It's gone to the epidemic proportions with the kind of embellishment that we see. And it's really not becoming of the game or the good players that play it, the character guys. So I think that you have to identify both. What I said in front of Stefan and the rest of the Fantasy Camp group was that I would like to see more emphasis put on the diver than on the initial call, the embellisher. I think there should be a four-minute penalty for embellishment, and the initial call, if it's a minor penalty, should be two. So that is going to put some onus on that player not to embellish. He's going to hurt his team in the end, and his coach is going to get involved and say, hey, he had the penalty. Don't be embellishing. Stay on your feet.
Kerry, I imagine you get this question quite often. What can be done as far as rule changes go to increase scoring? And we've talked about it a lot on this show, and I tend to believe that goal scoring, or I guess the lack of goal scoring, isn't as big of an issue as some people believe. And the NHL, of course, made some minor rule changes this year, with the size of the goalkeeper's area and some other rules, face-offs and that, but there were no major rule changes done. I guess, do you believe that there needs to be major rule changes to increase goal scoring? And if you do, what are some rule changes that you would like to see that could potentially increase goal scoring in the NHL?
Well, number one, I think the game is terrific. It's got speed, it's got skill, and it's really in good shape for the most part. If you want to increase goal scoring, and I wrote a column about it on Come On Ref, that there's been a slippage and a decline in the restraining fouls that were called away from the play. So I think that if the referees call penalties and we have a certain percentage of a goal scored on execution of power plays, that in itself, if they just adhered to the rules, called the rules as they are intended, and as the expectation is from the general managers, relative to restraining and holding up in the neutral zone, I think that's going to increase the goal scoring just on its own merit. I don't think you need to make the nets bigger. I'm a traditionalist. The goalie equipment is the goalie equipment. It's going to be pretty difficult even, to shrink their equipment, which is there for their protection. You may be in a liability position. So leave that alone. Call the penalties as they are. Somebody just tweeted me not too long ago about, what do you think if you allowed the attacking team hand passes in the attacking zone, not just in their defending zone? Made sense to me. We allow players to use their feet unless it's a real distinct kicking motion. So why not allow them to bat the puck with their hand as well?
Kerry, final question. On that point, I think it's interesting, calling the fouls as they are. Remember, I guess it's now, 10 years ago or so after the lockout, there was Gary Bettman and the NHL decided to stress, calling the fouls you're mentioning, slats, hooking and holding and all that. It seems like over time, and I think maybe to your point, that some of those penalties aren't being called as they were before. Do you think, you may have kind of answered this in the previous question, but do you think that's a product of, just time and the refs backing off a little bit? Or do you think part of that is the players having adjusted significantly to the new rules and not committing as many fouls as they did before?
Well, when we came back from the first lockout in 2005 with the new NHL, there were players that couldn't compete anymore because of the new style of play and the enforcement of the rules. Commissioner Bettman pleaded with us over a number of training camps to get rid of the obstruction at that time, as it was called. He begged us to. And we would start out that there would just be a slippage and it would go back to normal. Players even would say, it doesn't matter what you say at the start of the season because we know it's just going to go back the way it always has been. That changed in 2005. There was a total buy-in by the NHL Players Association, by the coaches, by the owners, and by the officiating department and their officials. So when you had that kind of group support, it wasn't just the referee that was being chastised for calling too many penalties in a game. It was expected. And it created a faster game, a better game over time. And there was a learning curve. I do think, to your point, the players adjusted and they have adjusted. But I tell you, they will cheat as much as the referee lets them. If you're not cheating, you're not trying in some camps. So if you have to stay the course, and you have to stay vigilant, and there has to be accountability. The accountability has to come from the officiating department to make sure that each referee is on the standard that is expected. When it slips, it starts to slide, and the snowball rolls down the hill, and players will do whatever they can get away with.
Kerry Fraser is a former NHL official. He writes the Come On Ref column on TSN.ca. Kerry, greatly appreciate your time this evening. Thanks very much for joining us and providing insight into the officiating side of the NHL.
Always a pleasure, guys.
Take care, Kerry.
Thanks a lot, Kerry.
Let's head to break. When we come back, the latest on the Travis Hamonic trade rumors and trade demand. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Big thanks to Kerry Fraser for joining us to talk about officiating in the NHL, and of course to Joe Beninati, Capitals broadcaster, for joining us earlier in the program to preview tomorrow night's Jets-Capitals game. In case you missed either of those interviews, they're available for download on iTunes, on illegalcurve.com, and of course on tsn1290.ca. This segment of the show brought to you by Frank Zappia and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtor of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com or at 204-772-2100.
When's the next lunch with the Zappias?
I don't know. I'm going to see Frank this week, so I'll set something up.
Yeah, we had a really good lunch
a couple weeks ago.
2 or 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And as you know, I love lunch.
Before you got the plague. So, yeah, you know, we appreciate you playing hurt again today.
Well, yeah, I'm recovering. I'm taking Tylenol, cold, and sinus. I'm drinking lots of water. I've basically had soup for every meal for the last 5 days, so I'm hoping that this cold is gone over the next couple of days.
You did a donut, though.
Two donuts, to be perfectly.
He ate two donuts.
What did you bring them for?
You said
you only ate soup.
Did you bring those donuts just for us to look at?
No, I brought them for you guys to eat, but then at the same time, you should know that, you know, the bus is going to run you over.
So hold on. I'm sick, so I can't enjoy a nice little donut? What else do I have in my life right now?
Well, good point. You know, I can't argue with that, I guess, in that front.
That donut was the highlight of my day, Drew.
It's probably
aside
true.
From doing the show with you guys.
Yeah, the donut probably still was more exciting than doing the show with us. Back to the Travis Hamonic update, as the various pundits are weighing in and bringing up the various trade rumors surrounding it. It all still leads back to Winnipeg as the most logical fit, but based on a lot of people's analysis. You know, we talked about it on Saturday's show in detail. Elliot Friedman talks about it. Eric Francis of the Calgary Sun talks about it in a recent article talking about how Calgary, the Flames, supposedly interested, but the Islanders asked for TJ Brody. And that's no-go for the Flames. I mentioned this to you, Richie, on Saturday night at the Jets games. Dougie Hamilton.
Well, apparently Eric Francis is saying that's a no-go as well.
Yeah. Are you surprised? Would you do Dougie Hamilton? I know you're not a big Dougie Hamilton guy.
I mean, again, I acknowledge his talent, and I said that the deal they made for him was good value.
Right.
Having said that, I'm not the biggest fan of Dougie Hamilton. He'll create offense for you. He's not the most intense player. He's not very physical for his size. You know, it's a lot of dollars for a guy that, you know, I'm not the biggest fan of. So, yeah, Hamonic would provide a different element to a team that already has Giordano and Brody to create a lot of offense. So I think I would be fine with that deal. You obviously save a little bit of cash, too, which is going to be necessary for some of the players you're going to need to sign in the next little while.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not even talking about guys like Chris Russell and Hudler, more so Monahan and Gaudreau and all that. So, yeah. You know, it's tough to sign a guy to a long-term deal and make that move. I think, you know, it's interesting what you're hearing and what Gar Snow was asking for. And there was rumors that it might happen on Monday or Tuesday. I just didn't, you know, and that's today, of course. Nothing has happened yet. And you have to wonder how much longer this can last distraction-wise for the Islanders. You know, we talk about the distraction or possible distraction that may be taking place in Winnipeg with Ladd and Buffalo. We talked about that at length. Forget that for now. But that's just pending UFAs. That's not players who have demanded to be traded.
Sure.
In this case, you have a player who's demanded to be traded. Now, again, for personal reasons, and he's supposed to be a very well-liked guy in the dressing room. I don't doubt that for a second. But that's a distraction for a team that has aspirations of being a big-time contender. So how much longer can this last? Now, will that distraction, if they hold on to him, hypothetically, through the trade deadline, will that distraction, you know, move to the side until the playoffs are over? I think it would, and then it would come back at the draft.
Sure.
But until then, it's not going to.
And I think it's possible that Travis Hamonic isn't traded before the trade deadline. Garth Snow is not going to trade Travis Hamonic unless he likes what he's getting back, right, Drew?
Sure.
And I think everybody, and we talked about this on Saturday's Illegal Curve Hockey Show, right?
Mm-hmm.
We talked about who would be a good trading partner. We looked at the four Western Canadian teams, and then we also talked about Minnesota. Richie mentioned Minnesota.
Yeah.
I can't take credit for that. It was Richie who brought up Minnesota. Makes sense geographically. Makes sense because they're very deep on defense, right? Everybody right now is looking for that one-for-one trade, right, Drew?
Yeah.
And I don't necessarily know that it's going to be a one-for-one trade because Travis Hamonic has asked for a trade and because he's a unique player. He has that kind of term certainty with being locked up for several years on a really good contract, by the way. We talked about that, too, on Saturday. But I don't necessarily know that you're going to find that one perfect trade. That's why I think it might be a team that people are not expecting. It's probably not going to be an Eastern Conference team. It's certainly not going to be a team in the Metropolitan Division. We all agree on that.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably going to be a Western team and probably a team that's geographically close to Winnipeg. But I think everybody's kind of looking for that one trade. And we went over all the teams, and Edmonton doesn't want to give up Darnell Nurse. Calgary doesn't want to give up TJ Brody. The Winnipeg Jets, from everything that I've been told, don't want to give up on Jacob Trouba right now. So I know he's struggling, but I don't know that there's a trade that really fits right now. So you might have to throw in a draft pick. You might have to throw in a forward. It might have to be a 2-for-2 trade or a 3-for-3 trade. Look what happened with Evander Kane,
or
right?
A 3-team trade.
Right.
There's a lot of chat about they might need a third team to make a trade possible.
Interesting enough that in a league without many trades at all, the news hits today that Ryan Johansson may be available in Columbus, and he's now passed Hamonic on the trade bait section of the on TSN. Frank Saravalli, our friend Frank Saravalli's article on TSN.ca, they have a trade bait ranking, and Johansson's now number one, and Hamonic number two. So, interesting. Now, how does that affect the market? Well, I think it does. Now, they're not the same. I mean, you're talking about forward defensemen, but you're talking about big-time centermen and real good defensemen. And what will a team look to, you know, for example, Calgary, you're not, you know, you have depth
right
on, but you have depth on defense.
Yep.
What are you offering a team in Columbus without defensemen, a lot of top end defensemen, that has a top line center available? So maybe that completely takes that team out of it, right? You can't look at this all in a vacuum. Availability of one player affects the rest of them.
Sure,
many cases.
There's dominoes that affect.
Yes.
You're sort of getting to the point of the season where now that you're at the 20 game mark, a lot of general managers, they might be hesitant to do anything until they get to that 20 game mark because they want to see what the team that they put forward out of training camp does. And now they're saying, oh, they're not good enough, or this is going to be a lost year, as you know, maybe they're saying that in Calgary, given how the struggles of that team to start. A lot more general managers might be willing to entertain offers than they were, you know, in the first 6 weeks of the NHL season.
And this team has been brought up, and even though this team just beat the Winnipeg Jets and is struggling, I think that's even more so reason why Colorado makes sense. And Colorado is closer to Winnipeg than New York is. I realize it's not as close maybe as Travis Hamonic, might like. But you look at Colorado, and what do they need? They need a defensive shutdown defenseman. That's exactly what they need.
Mm-hmm.
So then the question becomes, Richie, well, who are you sending back the other way? Is it going to be a right shot defenseman? Is it going to be a prospect? I mean, they already went out and they acquired Zadorov. He's in the AHL right now. He's not even cracking the NHL lineup. So the Colorado Avalanche are probably looking at their situation right now, and they're saying, hold on a second. We're not doing that well right now, but if we go on a nice little run here, and you look at the Ottawa Senators, what they did last year. You look at the Minnesota Wild. Are the Colorado Avalanche potentially the Minnesota Wild this year? I would say no, they're
but,
not.
I mean, who are they talking about? Who are they training? Barry or Johnson?
Oh, you and I had this conversation again on Saturday. I thought that Eric Johnson, if you want to do a straight one-for-one trade, Colorado might be interested in that. In that, it makes
save
a little
money.
You save money. You know, because Hamonic gets paid a little less than Johnson does. They can use that money towards the Barry who's going to be an RFA at the end of the season. And the Islanders, you know, they might be okay with paying Johnson a little bit more than they pay Hamonic because they have cost certainty there. They know what he's going to make. He's under a long-term contract. So I thought that it might make a little bit of sense in terms of Eric Johnson.
And you have to factor that in.
Sorry, yeah. As if you view them as equal defensemen.
If you do, which...
Yeah, if you do, and I mean, I have time for the argument.
Hamlin's a better defenseman.
But I have time for that argument, Ezzy, but the problem is if you're Colorado, you're thinking, well, if we think they're equal, if we, for argument's sake, they're equal, why are we taking back more money? Give us something else.
Sure.
Yeah, and that's what it is. Maybe I'm a little bit partial because I'm in Manitoba and I'm a huge Hamonic fan.
The Islanders, why are we taking back?
Yeah, and
I don't have any issue with Eric Johnson's game. I don't love Eric Johnson's game.
He gets made.
Travis Hamonic's not Drew Doughty, though, but it's the money thing.
You're saying Garth Snow could say to Joe Sakic, you have to sweeten this deal.
Yes,
if those players are equal, why am I going to pay more for your guy?
Right, and they have some prospects. I mean, do you throw in, I know Mikhail Grigorenko isn't exactly lighting it up, or somebody this? I'm just saying, like, do you throw somebody in like that, or do you throw in somebody that you've drafted recently, right? They're obviously not going to throw in anybody of significance like Nathan MacKinnon or Matt Duchene or anybody like that. So you're not going to get one of those guys. I don't think. I mean, I realize Matt Duchene was the subject of trade rumors.
Mm-hmm.
I personally think he's not going anywhere. But, hey, it could happen.
I'm with you, too. I just
don't
that team doesn't even have the offensive depth to be making that trade.
Why would you trade Matt Duchene now? Especially Matt Duchene's on an 8-game point streak?
Yeah. Well,
so I don't understand why Matt Duchene would be the guy that's singled out. But when you look at the situation the Islanders are in and the situation that other teams are in, I think that has to be paramount, right? Calgary's struggling, so it makes sense. But again, apparently they want TJ Brody. And does Calgary want to move one of those young pieces? I don't think they're moving Gaudreau or Monahan or Bennett or any of these guys. So
they don't need Travis Hamonic that badly to give up one of their top young forwards. And, you know, based
or
on
defenseman.
Well, you know, I think they would.
Johansson? What about Johansson for a second?
Straight up?
No, I'm not talking about them for them. I'm saying, like, you know, let's angle the discussion towards Johansson.
Sure. I mean, this is a guy who's got some animosity in Columbus. I don't care what anyone says, is that the way he handled, holding out and the way he handled his RFA negotiations a couple of years ago, I think, you know, he certainly put up great numbers last year. But
a bit of a diva, apparently.
Yeah, you still...
We've heard...
You still taste that the bitterness of how they handled that negotiation.
Yeah, other things are too, Drew. I mean...
Yo, attitudinally, I think there is as well. You don't hold out like that unless you have a bit of a diva complex on you. One comes with the other a bit. How often do you see holdouts nowadays?
Yeah, I mean, am I saying a player holding out? Well, there's other things we hear all. You know, the attitude's a bit of an issue there. So, and it's outlined in Frank's article on TSN.ca in terms of the holdout and the publicly critical stance of Jarmo Kekäläinen.
I just tweeted the article.
What do you give for a guy like that? I mean, that you're going to ask for a boatload, right? I mean, and you're looking at a guy. Remember, the contract situation is interesting. That's why Hamonic's so appealing. Back to Hamonic for a second. 4 years left, 3.9 a year. Well, I mean, you know, you're not going to be able to sign a free agent for that amount of money.
Yeah, and Richie, Ryan Johansson obviously is in the second year of the contract that he just signed, right? So, I mean, there's some certainty there. But as far as Ryan Johansson goes, as you've talked about, you think he could be as impactful as a guy like Ryan Getzlaff.
A lot of similarities
to their game, right? He's a bona fide number one center, right? And I'm looking at teams in the West that maybe already have number one centers. He'd look pretty good as a number two center, right? Similar to, I'm not saying that he's necessarily going to be traded to a team in the West or what team it will be, but look at similar to the way Ryan Kessler was picked up to be the second line center behind Getzlaff and how that was successful. They almost made it to the Stanley Cup Finals last year. There would be a lot of teams, I think, in the Western Conference right now, whether you're in a playoff spot or not in a playoff spot, that would want to go after Ryan Johansson.
Don't you think Vancouver makes a call and says, again, we don't know, but he's from Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
Vancouver needs that next guy to take over for Henrik Sedin up the middle.
Sure.
They've got prospects to give up. They've got five rookies in the lineup right now. Do they move maybe a Jake Virtanen or a Bo Horvat? I mean, they have the pieces, Richie.
They do.
It's a good call.
There's other
potential
teams,
landing
course.
Spot for
there's
sure.
Other teams. I mean, Edmonton's not making a trade for a center. They don't need a center. We can go through the rosters here.
Every team could use Ryan Johansson.
Well, yes and no, Drew. I mean, let's talk. You got a big money contract coming up after next. Not for this season. After next season.
Sure.
Do you want to commit big dollars? And you're going to be testing him for sure, and to see if he's worth it and all that. But you know, He's not maybe the hardest worker. So if you're trying to change the culture and you're worried about that, you might have disqualified. But I agree with you, Drew. Most teams will make a call on him. That'll be a very interesting one. And just Columbus in general, I mean, I certainly don't think just John Tortorella is a direct reason for this. Maybe he was a he's a test for the guys upstairs to give him his opinion on it. Mm-hmm. But that team is built a certain way, and Ryan Johansson, when he's on, plays the way they want to be built. Big, strong, along the boards, control the puck, control the tempo of the game. If you move him out, you do have a lot of guys paid big money deals in that team that are overpaid, to me, based on their offensive capabilities. So if you lose a playmaker and potential dominant offensive force, how do you replace
him? If you lose your alpha dog, you have to replace him with another alpha dog, not a bunch of, you know, okay players. You can't trade a dollar for three quarters and two dimes and a nickel. It just doesn't work. Even though it equals the same thing on paper, the dollar is still worth more than the handful of change. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll look back at the NHL through the quarter mark of the season. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. You're listening to NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. The segment brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. In case you're still looking for your company Christmas party, maybe you're tasked with that responsibility and you've been slacking a little bit, Rumors Comedy Club, great destination. Make it happen. Check it out. Looking for New Year's Eve plans. People are going to start thinking about that.
That's right.
Check it out. Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. Pretty much, just check out Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. Make it nice and easy on yourself there. Quarter mark of the NHL season. You know, what's the number one storyline? You know, is the storyline for you Sidney Crosby and his struggles so far? You know, that's sort of maybe a little bit under the radar given the tremendous start that Patrick Kane is off to, even in the face of such, you know, uncertainty regarding his legal situation, which apparently now has been resolved. You know, what's the storyline that's jumping out at you if you had to write the yearbook for the NHL after 20-some-odd games?
That's not the biggest storyline for me, Drew, and I think when the season is over, when all 82 games have been played, I wouldn't be surprised if Sidney Crosby is top 10 in the league in scoring. I mean, he's had a bad start to the season. Mm-hmm. To me, to be honest with you, a bigger surprise to me is the way Ryan Getzlaf has played. Ryan Getzlaf had the Anaheim Ducks almost in the Stanley Cup Finals last year. They win a game, they go to the Stanley Cup Finals. And he's got one goal in, 17 games or 18 games. He's really struggling.
It's pretty
crazy, yeah. The storyline for me is more so probably some of the really good teams last year and how they've struggled. So we're talking about the Anaheim Ducks. To me, the most disappointing team. I agree with Frank Saravelli on that one. Sure. They started off the season losing their first 8 games. I don't think anybody saw that coming. Columbus, that's a big surprise too. But I think the expectations for Columbus weren't as high as Anaheim. Tampa Bay, they haven't been coming out of the gate with a bang here. They've struggled. They've had their ups and downs. Steven Stamkos has been pretty inconsistent for Steven Stamkos. I mean, he's got goals and points.
That's a big one, isn't he? You're right about that, Tampa Bay.
I think the Tampa Bay Lightning, I picked them to win the Cup this year. I picked them to win the President's Trophy, and they've been kind of
anybody you pick.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
wouldn't want to be on that list.
Stay away from them. And then,
kiss of death right there.
I'm pretty disappointed with the way the Calgary Flames have played. I'm pretty disappointed with the way a lot of teams have played. Chicago Blackhawks aren't lighting it up too much either. They're just barely in a playoff spot right mm-hmm. now. So I think, to me, the storyline is the NHL is wide open right now. And the New York Rangers and the Montreal Canadiens, they're arguably, doing what they were expected of. Dallas Stars, top team in the Western Conference. I think we all expected the Dallas Stars to be good.
By the way, don't you want to be the Chicago Blackhawks are right now?
Yeah, they're kind of like a sleeping giant.
Don't you want to be the crossover team this year?
Yeah, probably.
Sure. Go up against the Pacific Division? Why wouldn't you always want to do
that? That's not a bad thing, remember.
Yeah,
that Pacific Division is terrible.
I'll tell you what, I'd be on board with a first-round Los Angeles-Chicago playoff matchup.
Sure. I think the biggest surprise, I mean, there's many... as you touch on a lot of the points, two interesting points to me are scoring. You know, we talked about scoring, increasing scoring and all that. I don't think there's been enough talk about the fact that the top scorers are on pace for monster years. I mean, last year, NHL Art Ross winner, had Jamie Benn, had less than 90 points.
Yep, 87.
This year, Patrick Kane,
32 points in 21 games. Sagan, 30 points in 21 games. Ben, 29 points in 21 games. And Taylor Hall, 24 and 21. All in excess of a point a game.
Sure.
And those top three guys, you know, well in excess of a point a game. And of course, two of them play together, Sagan and Ben, a dynamite combination. But
should mention number five on that list, well, John Klingberg.
I want to get to that.
Sorry, okay.
I want to get to that.
Okay.
So that is a really interesting point to me. Now, the other point, and you just mentioned it, Drew, and you just alluded to it, is Klingberg. Now, Klingberg is five, Carlson seven. That's the other really fascinating part for me. These two Swedish defensemen, you know, there's some similarities to their game. I mean, Carlson skates better, and you know, they're Swedish right-handed shooting guys who like to jump into the play. But two defensemen in the top seven of National Hockey League scoring, but basically both at over a point a game. That, hey, we're not at the 5-10 game mark here. I realize it's still early, but that's a quarter of the way through the season. You have two defensemen with over a point a game in the top seven, 5 and 7 respectively, Klingberg and Carlson of NHL scoring. That is impressive.
To your point,
Ryan Suter's not that far behind either with 19 points.
To your point there, Rich, about how, you know, Kane and Sagan and Ben are you know, on pace for monster years. And how, you know, it seems like, to me, that would tell me that last year in the low point scoring, you know, was more an aberration than it was anything else.
And maybe I haven't delved deep enough into this, and there's people who are more qualified than I am to do it. But you look at it, and I think you're seeing, and I've said this in the show before, you're seeing a bunch of players in the National Hockey League who shouldn't be here right now.
The bottom guys.
Young, talented players who should be in juniors or overseas or in the AHL or maybe can't be based on the rules, developing. And what you're seeing now is the top-end guys are getting a lot of points, but the scoring hasn't really changed too much. The bottom guys aren't ready, and they're not able to create. Skill level there is probably there. They're not seasoned. They're not strong enough. They're not disciplined enough and all that stuff, and that takes time. But before, without the cap as a problem, quote-unquote, in a sure. context, you would have veterans having those spots, probably a little bit more inclined, probably better defensively, different things like that, and a little bit more reliable, and you knew what you were getting. And, you know, I think probably bringing your top, maybe, I don't know, maybe bringing your top-end guys down. I haven't looked at this close enough. I think that the top-end scorers are there. They're back to high levels. Maybe that continues. There's a lot of guys that are close to a point of game here, Drew. But the bottom guys, on how many rosters right now do you see young guys who probably aren't necessarily ready? You know, you watch Vancouver, where they have six rookies play. Even the Jets, they have a couple of, you know, is ideally Nikolai Ehlers right now? He's had some good spurts, but certainly he's struggled lately. Is ideally he in the NHL to develop the way he's developing? We saw what happened with Nick Patan. I mean, these guys have played, you know, a number of games in the National Hockey League now.
If this was a decade ago,
yeah,
you know, Nikolai Ehlers would not be in the NHL right now.
That's right.
It's the same with Mark Scheifele. He wouldn't have been in the NHL during his rookie year either, just because they weren't, like, to your point, they weren't just physically able, they weren't physically mature. But now you can't let them sort of continue the season in junior or in the AHL. The rosters don't allow for
it. You can let them, you just have to pay more.
Well, sure.
And we're not signaling out Nikolai Ehlers.
No.
You certainly would not, as Richie said, see six rookies on any team,
Vancouver,
let alone the Vancouver Canucks, who were a playoff team last year, right? So Richie nailed it again. I mean, it's because of the salary cap. You're seeing guys like Curtis Glencross, not in the NHL. He had to be invited on a PTO by the Toronto Maple Leafs. It's because there just isn't room under the salary cap on certain teams. Yeah. Not the Jets. The Jets would have the salary cap, but other teams. And you have a lot of good young rookies in the league, and it's going to be a wide-open Calder race, especially now that Connor McDavid is out, right? And you could probably say Artemi Panarin is the front runner. Nikolai Ehlers, he struggled a little bit, but he was in that conversation. There's a lot of good rookies in the NHL. Jack Eichel is another one, obviously. But I think Rich makes a good point. You know, that's why I think sometimes as in the media, if you want to call it that, or as hockey fans, we get a little bit too obsessed with numbers. And what I mean by that is, would you rather see three or four guys get 100 points, or would you rather see the average goals per game rise compared to last year? I would rather see three or four guys with 100 points. And I know goals for a game are down this year, and that's why the NHL and some people are freaking out a little bit. I think, you know, if goals for per game, average goals for per game, are down 0.3 or 0.4 or whatever it is right now,
the season, right?
I really don't care. I would rather see Tyler Seguin and Patrick Kane battle it out for the Art Ross Trophy, and one of those guys maybe get to 105 points. I think that's exciting. Don't get too obsessed with the average goals goals per game, because in today's NHL, with the coaching and the strategy, you're going to have 1-0 games like you had last night between the Washington Capitals and the Edmonton Oilers. That's just going to happen, right?
Sure.
So goals are down a little bit, but you're seeing some, as Rich mentioned, some excellent individual starts to the season with guys like Sagan and Kane and all these guys.
Top flight talent is the reason why you buy tickets. You buy tickets to see the best perform and excel, not to watch a group of, you know, 12 guys who are all okay. You watch to see the best in the league do things that make you say, wow.
Exactly.
And you're seeing it with Kane and with Sagan and with Ben and with some of the other players to start the year.
What about maybe seeing Sagan and Ben go 1-2? I mean, when was the last time that happened? Having two guys go 1-2 on one team,
right? Crosby and Malkin ever go 1-2?
That would be the last one. Ovechkin and Backstrom.
That's a long time ago.
Yeah, but I don't think they ever did.
Yeah, it's been a while.
And the Elias Sports Bureau on the line.
Yeah. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll talk about the Forbes valuations of NHL teams. There's a new number one. We'll tell you about it next on NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. 10 minutes before the top of the hour, welcome back to NHL This Week. A programming note, of course, Saturday, you're normally going to be looking for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show at 12 noon.
Yeah, we'll be here.
No, we won't.
Oh, we won't.
We won't be here at 12 noon.
I'm joking.
Okay. We'll be here at 3 p.m. with the Jets, of course, playing in Colorado, in Denver, at 9 o'clock. We're going to be on at 3. So remember, you know, recalibrate your day. I know you focus it around Illegal Curve. Just keep your radio locked on TSN 1290. We'll be there for you. We'll be there at 3 o'clock, though.
You push everything back for the late game.
Yeah.
So then you just push your routine back a bit. You go a little later, and the game's not starting at 6, as usual, on Saturday. It's starting at 9.
That's nice. Have a couple more beers game Friday night, because we know we can sleep in a little bit.
This is true.
This is something you excel in, especially. Well, actually, you're going to be having a lot more beers, because if you're going to start with the Jets puck drop, that's at 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah,
the Black Friday game.
I'll be at work at
that time, unfortunately. Oh, you're going to be at work. Okay, so no drinking on the job. That's good for you. Good policy.
Yeah. They've told me not to do that. So
this segment brought to you... Again, is that what you said? The segment brought to you by Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys has become known as the world's best jersey customizer. Keener's knowledge of jerseys is unsurpassed. If you want awesome jerseys for your team or have a jersey you want customized, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com or find them on your next opponent. Leading into my question about the jerseys, did you see the winter? I guess it's not the Winter Classic. It's the Stadium Series games. The jerseys for the Blackhawks, the Minnesota Wild, and the Detroit Red Wings.
Love all of them.
I'm not crazy about the Wild one.
The Wild
really like the
kind
Detroit
of
Red Wings.
I actually like the Blackhawks one the most.
I think the Blackhawks one is the sharpest.
Love that Red
one.
Wings really jersey. Nice, yeah. Okay, well, I thought of Keener, too. I always think of him when they release new jerseys, and I like most jerseys nowadays, because I think, especially when you have kind of that heritage element, I can always find a reason to like them, and
well, the
I
one
really
that,
like those Wings jerseys.
Yeah, of all the Stadium Series or Winter Classic games this year, the number one, the Canadiens one, is still the nicest, but they've been doing a good job with these. I mean,
they have, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Avalanche Colorado Rockies jersey is great.
You know, I don't know if I've seen that one.
Yeah,
is that for the Denver?
Yep.
I have to look.
Wear that
it's pretty
one.
Cool.
That's great.
Really?
Yeah.
I'll have to
they
Google
did a good
it.
Job on that one.
Okay, I'll have to Google that one. We're right up against it, so just a couple minutes here, guys. The Forbes valuations have come out. They do this each and every year around this time, and there's a new number one. The New York Rangers are now the NHL's most valuable team, followed by the Montreal Canadiens, and the perennial most valuable team, the Toronto Maple Leafs, has dropped to number 3. On the list in terms of the most valuable NHL teams. You surprised at this development?
A little bit surprised that the Leafs aren't number one. Not sad about it. The Leafs aren't really number one in anything, but yeah, a little bit surprised, Drew. That might be the fact that this team stinks right now, to be honest, and that we've seen pictures of the stands at games.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure the tickets are sold, almost assuredly sold, but people aren't at the games, aren't buying things, and you know, there's been talks about luxury boxes over the past couple of years, not all being taken up. And that probably, you know, considering the success of the Habs and Rangers, who've gone to the playoffs numerous times and have probably maximized dollars there and enhance the value of their brand. I think those are probably all factors. I don't write for Forbes, but I would say that those, you know, I guess I'm happy to see that successful organizations, which the Rangers and Habs have been. They haven't won the cup, but they've been successful organizations, has elevated those teams past an organization that is now trying to get back to where they were 40 years ago.
Richie, let me tell you, though, you dress well enough that you could be talked about in Forbes magazine. But, you know, I agree with Rich, though.
He's not an economist. He just plays one on radio.
The obvious surprise, Drew, is that Toronto's not number one, right? We always expect Toronto to be number one as far as the team that's worth the most. And they're not worth that much less than the New York Rangers. What is it, tens of millions of dollars, right? They're not that far behind.
The Rangers are number one at 1.2 billion. The Canadians are second at 1.8 billion.
So it's 100 million
like
or
the
whatever.
Habs just like the Habs. If you go to Montreal, I mean, that's the thing about it. I mean, the Leafs really span like probably the hatred and obviously the tradition of the Habs span the nation too. But really, when you go to Quebec, it's like, people don't realize that's
hockey,
all that matters.
Hockey is a religion.
That is all that matters
in Montreal. It really is
way more than it is in Toronto.
Yes, it is.
And I think it's 100%. A religion to a certain degree here as well. But Montreal,
just on a smaller scale.
It's a whole totally different level. And I think the other impressive thing, Drew, about this list. Yeah. I know we're right up against the break here, or at the end of the show. Yeah. But
Alex will tell us when we have to go.
The break, the 5-day break.
Yeah. That all franchises have still gone up in value, despite the fact that the Canadian dollar is lower.
Now, some of them went down.
But I think as a whole, they've gone up, right?
The average NHL team is now worth $505 million, which is a 3% increase from 2014. So, yes, you are correct. There are some that have gone down as a result.
The dollar goes back up, Ezzy, to your point, then everything goes up.
Yeah, dollar goes back up, then the Habs and the Leafs are running away with this listing. That's it for this Tuesday in NHL This Week. Big thank you to our guests, Carey Fraser and Joe Beninati. In case you missed any of the program, it's available for download on iTunes, on tsn1290.ca, and on legalcurve.com. Big thank you to our sponsors, Keener Jerseys, Riverview Health Center Foundation, Psycho on Life, Zappia Group Realty, Bernstein's Deli, Linden Market Dental Center, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. For producer Alex, for Richard Pollock, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Until Saturday at 3 p.m., we wish you good night and good luck, and thanks for listening to NHL This Week.